I think the word honesty has been really widely misunderstood. I have no tolerance for it anymore. It's kind of like the equivalent of being like, no offense, but you're ugly. You know what I mean? And like, well, you actually meant offense and that offended me. And it's when people, men especially, are like, I'm being honest, like I'm being transparent. And then they come out with something that you're like, whoa, that didn't need to exit your mouth. You didn't need to tell me that. You didn't need to say it. You didn't need to think it, really. And you did. And now you feel like a really good person because you kind of like gave yourself the coding of, oh, well, I'm being transparent.
Because people not being forthcoming about, you know, information that is not necessary for the other party. The reason people do that is not because they're trying to be malicious and evil. It's because they're trying to like soften a blow. Like there's a reason that that's the common practice. So it's like, why are we trying to switch up the game here? It's okay to lie to people for the sake of their feelings. I don't want to know sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's something specifically in men that I've noticed over the years. It's just like when they go to therapy and they took therapy and they were like, hey, like the Jonah Hill situation, just using therapy speak to then turn it around and be like as selfish and shitty as possible. And it's like, that's not the purpose of therapy. Like, just get one thing right. And I think the way that they use the language of honesty and transparency is just very like self-serving.
Well, I just think that there's benefits to more people going to therapy, but I think that at times it lends a lot of people to validate their feelings and emotions to the extent that they're not actually accounting for other people's emotions, really, that you're prioritizing your own feelings over how they impact other people. Sometimes therapy can not, and I'm not talking about all therapy, I've been to a lot of therapy, but it can kind of cross a border into like narcissism, like you're opening up a box of worms and suddenly, you know, you're thinking about things so much. And I think, let's say,
and how everything relates to you as a person.
Yeah. And like, let's say maybe up until this point, you haven't really been in touch with your emotions in any real way. And now you're suddenly like learned how to do that. I think there's almost like a childishness about like this kind of epiphany where people are really just like thinking that their feelings are the most important thing, their truth, their everything, and just completely disregarding how other people feel. But I think part of being emotionally intelligent is not just like understanding your own feelings, it's understanding how you make other people feel and how you impact other people. And I think in my mind, like emotional intelligence 101 would be to think about how necessary it is to be quote unquote honest with somebody and how that could end up hurting their feelings, even if it makes me feel better to be like, oh, I got that off my chest.
Well, it's like covering your tracks, basically. Well, like, yeah. Well, I did the 1, 2, 3, like I read the rule book and now I'm done. I can like wipe my hands and I'm clean. I'm a good person. And it's like, no, it's not that simple. You can't just apply the same rules to everyone. Anyways, well, we're being very vague, but...
But I think if somebody kind of hurts you in, like, a vague way, you might feel like you have no closure and you might be left wondering, like, what was happening. But I think if someone hurts you in a very specific way, like, that's something that might have, like, a very direct impact on how you see yourself and how you see the world. And I think that sometimes it's okay to have questions rather than feel like there's, like, a specific cause of the problem that you end up fixating on, maybe.
Yeah, truly. I just think I'm like, okay, men, have you ever heard of a white lie? It's a thing and it exists, and sometimes you can just lie to like cushion the blow of something, and no one needs you to be honest. I don't care.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at. I'm in my femcel era once again. We've entered it again. But maybe next podcast episode I'll be out of it. Who knows?
Who knows? I mean, this is sort of like maybe a finale, so when we meet back up with you guys, it could be different.
Yeah, hopefully things will be very different when we meet back up with you guys. I'm Aya.
I'm Hannah.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the internet phenomena that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is a loose, no pun intended, history of sex on the internet, the symbiosis of humanity's two most basic instincts, innovation and getting off. If you like our show and want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have bonus episodes, weekly mini episodes, and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because that helps
a lot.
We'll be right back. So there's this model on Instagram named Sika Moon. And like your typical Instagram model, Sika Moon has over 300,000 followers, a bio telling you where she's from, which is Berlin, and a grid full of sexy, half-clothed pictures and videos, most of the time alone, but sometimes featuring other Instagram models. And like any hot girl on the app, when you scroll down to her comment section, you'll find swaths of men saying stuff like, "Hi, Sika, your fuchsia underwear is very cute. Then you are always very beautiful. I need you, baby. How old are you? And do you have a boyfriend?" This is my commenting man voice.
Right. And that's exactly
it's my reply guy voice.
It's like every accent in the world mushed together in a blender.
Well, yes. But from a cursory scroll of Sika's feed, you'll notice some glaring inconsistencies. The size of her boobs changes drastically. Her belly button is skinny and small in some photos and, like, wide and shallow in others.
Good for her.
She seems to change ethnicities every once in a while. And in some photos, her waist looks like she had removed a rib or something. Because what if I told you that Sika is not real?
What?
Well, not exactly real. Sika is a 28-year-old woman who is actually from Berlin and who had been working as an adult creator on platforms like OnlyFans, Fansly, and ManyVids, and she was very successful at it. At the time, she was averaging about 40,000 euros a month.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but she found it to be exhausting and essentially burned out very quickly. This is when she discovered AI. Basically, she created a version of herself by using a cocktail of different AI and face-tuning apps like Stable Diffusion, Photoshop, and FaceApp, with the help of this programmer who runs an Instagram account called AI Build Art. And for videos, she uses actual videos of herself or her model friends and then renders the AI face onto those videos. And as of last September, her AI clone was bringing in about $20,000 a month. And not only has the technology allowed her to make more content for less labor, she describes it in an interview with Dazed as a creative process. She says, quote, "My audience loves porn, but now they enjoy and appreciate the beauty of my art, too. Knowing I'm a real girl behind this may help." So yes, in this episode, we are talking about AI porn and the questions it poses about bodily autonomy, the limitlessness of the male gaze, and celebrity image ownership. And right off the bat, do you feel like the Sika Moon story kind of reminds you of the whole gig economy talk we had in the OnlyFans episode?
Oh, for sure. It kind of feels like the inevitable evolution of, like, Sasha Grey or, like, the self-made kind of porn star. Just because in this specific instance, your initial instinct is to just be, like, you kind of had a creative idea and people are seemingly fine with it, whatever, like, get your bag. But then when you kind of take a step out, you're like, ooh, but I can't really support this in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean in the relation to the Sasha Grey is just that, like, she had a really great experience for herself, but perhaps did not make, like, a better environment for the kind of wider context of people doing her job, I guess.
Yeah, totally. Like, she's a hustler and you're, I guess, happy for her that she's making lots of money. It's also, like, we're seeing this concept of burnout, right? Like, the reason she started doing AI is because she was, like we talked about with the gig economy, like, a lot of what's happening with online sex work is that people are having to put in, like, way too many hours to stay afloat. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how she felt. Like, she had to put in a lot of hours. I mean, I wouldn't say she was staying afloat. I would say she was making very good money.
Yeah.
But essentially, she just felt like it was too many hours. But it feels like in order to cope with the gig economy, we're not using AI. Like, I wouldn't say that AI is necessarily a remedy for this problem with burnout and hustle culture. I feel like it's more something that's, like, soothing it or numbing us to it in a way. And actually, I feel a little bit like AI could almost escalate it. Because, like you're saying, with the idea of the vacuum, like, the more money an AI model is generating on these platforms, the more that, like, a real model, like someone who's using their actual face and body, is having to compete with these AI models. So then they have to start working harder and, like, putting in more hours.
Well, exactly. I mean, like, if it's time and labor saving to use AI, the solution is not like, okay, then every adult entertainer learns how to create their own AI. It's more that internet companies start investing in AI labor instead of, you know. So it's like she's having like this sort of like democratized experience with it. But ultimately what this is just signaling is that like, yeah, it would be way easier to just invest in AI.
Well, yeah, exactly. The whole democratizing concept can only last for so long. It's what we see with, and we're going to get into this, but it's what we saw with ChatGPT and the idea that it's democratizing AI, but essentially what it has actually done is destroyed like thousands of jobs.
Yeah, it'll get a couple people very wealthy and everyone else will be fucked.
Like she got in early, essentially.
Yeah.
Is what we're saying. So Sega Moon is one of like many examples of adult creators who are using AI to streamline their work. And while this has its own problems, like we just kind of discussed, she and other models like her are some of the very, very few cases in which AI is being used with the consent of women, when the source subject is basically the one using the technology for her own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
What we'll be focusing on mostly in this episode is what happens when the source subject doesn't know they're in the porn.
Ah, yes.
Starting off, what's important to know is that every AI-generated image of a person cannot exist without a real-life source subject, a real-life person, because machine learning is only capable of working with information that is already out there in the world, like we talked about with ChatGPT, which was an episode for some reason that was highly controversial. But basically, text-to-image generators like Stable Diffusion and Midjourney use deep learning technology, which is a form of machine learning based on artificial neural networks. Artificial neural networks are computing systems that mimic patterns in the human brain. And what they do is that they use a generative adversarial network, or GAN, to analyze a data set of images and discriminate among those images to determine which image is the most successful based on a prompt that it's given. So the technology is basically sorting through imagery, compiling the most optimal image based on those images.
Mm-hmm.
So with where we're at with this technology right now, an AI-generated image has to come from somewhere. And if it's an image of a human being, that means it'll typically come from a photo or a video of a real-life human being. We've already talked about like text-based technology with our ChatGPT episode, and I've talked about, you know, the implications that text-to-image generators have for art in a video on my channel. So for the purposes of this season, I want to look at what these image generators are most often used for, which is porn.
Wait, really?
Oh, yes. You will hear some frightening statistics.
Oh, God. Me, the girl who is already scared of AI.
Oh, yeah. This is a bad episode for you, girl.
Yeah, I'm going to try and be less tinfoil hatty than our
I love when you put on your little tinfoil hat.
Yeah, I don't know if our reviews did.
No, they definitely, our listeners did not like when we did that. Guess what, guys? We don't fucking care. These are my views. They will not change.
And also, a lot of our listeners rock and also agree with
us. Most of you rock, like almost all of you.
But the people who gave us bad ratings, go to hell.
Do you remember those images that were going around of 5 or 6 like hyper realistic AI generated blonde girls who all had like 6 or 7 fingers?
Yeah, they like all kind of have the same face and they also all look like 16 years old. Yeah, I remember.
How would you like describe their appearance? What did someone optimize them to be doing or looking like?
It's 4 blonde girls in black lingerie kind of giving the like face that you would make in middle school in your like profile pictures. Like it's like kind of like a smirk.
Like a smirk duck face. It's
closed mouth smirk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then they all have slightly different textured blonde hair and large boobs. And they're in lingerie and they're like holding up like a phone, taking a mirror selfie.
One of them has like a butt that's so just inhuman. Like it just to the way that she's standing is so physically impossible. Basically, when these got posted, everyone was like, why do those girls have 7 fingers? Like, is this what you guys are jerking off to? That's so weird. Just go watch porn.
And it's also like when it's just so obviously fake, it's like you like that. Like you're seeing a bunch of like unreal women and you're like, I'm okay with that. Like I like seeing this.
Oh, we'll get into why people like that. The person who posted it posted another one being like, look, it makes Asians too. And they posted like 1 of 4 Asian women who all eerily also have massive boobs and like who all also look 14. So AI image generators are often used to create not safe for work content, which ranges from anime style, like cartoon type images to photorealistic imagery like the one we just saw. And the big draw of these images is that they create male fantasies. Like for a similar reason people watch hentai or like cartoon porn, like Mrs. Incredible porn, because it can make the subjects do things that could never be done in real life, essentially, or make them have bodies that are basically impossible to have in real life.
So I'm just thinking about Mrs. Incredible.
Just thinking about Mrs. Incredible.
She's a slim thick queen.
Yeah. So yeah, it can make them do things that can never be done in real life, like getting fucked by a bunch of tentacles, or make them have bodies that are impossible to achieve in real life. So these generators create versions of the female body that are hyper-optimized for male pleasure, and it's kind of wild to see how that manifests, like what we just saw. No matter what ethnicity, the girls have small noses, they have big lips, but not like too big, they have long straight hair, they have like big boobs, big butts, sometimes cartoonishly big, like sometimes they'll have jugs in a way that's so alarming, and then sometimes not. A lot of these images will also make the girls have like really visible nipples. It's just hyper-optimized,
yeah,
hyper-sexualized. I actually read this essay for Sleek magazine last year where I tested Midjourney to see what beauty standards it would default to when I asked it to make a photograph of a person. And it was always pretty similar to what we just saw. Like, you would just put woman into the prompt and the woman it creates has like super visible cleavage and like super Eurocentrically beautiful. Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think that's the default?
It's mining technology, right? Or like mining already existing data. So would it not be like the most popular images online?
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Like, this is my logic as someone who doesn't really know how this works. But if we already online have like a bias towards certain women or the way that certain people look, then it would maybe make sense that that's the default because it's the most popular, I would assume. I saw on Twitter like yesterday, I don't know who posted it, but someone had asked one of those image generators to create an image of a bisexual person, a non-binary person, an asexual person, and it all was the same person. It's like a skinny white person with short purple hair.
It wasn't even fully white. It was like kind of a skinny, ethnically ambiguous person, but then with like, with pale-ish skin.
It was the same face for all of them.
It was the funniest that it had the funniest purple haircut.
Yeah, and they all had the same purple hair. And so it's like, yeah, where is it getting those images from? I guess I just don't know how the data collection of it works, but I'm sure, I guess, yeah, if you're just saying woman, it's going to like automatically default to like the most popular depictions of quote unquote woman that exists.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said the word bias. Like, this kind of technology mimics human bias. And yeah, like we talked about with ChatGPT, like there were all these issues with surveillance AI technology that ended up racially profiling people. You know, it's like humans are creating this technology. It's feeding from human-made stuff on the internet, like stuff that humans put on the internet. So of course it's going to be optimizing this stuff. I also kind of wondered if it's because like the machine is trained to discriminate, just in the sense that it's trained to like whittle down information to arrive at something that like maybe it thinks is perfect. So that would be the default if you're not telling it to make something like ugly, quote unquote. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So Stable Diffusion actually tried to clamp down on some of the not safe for work images, mainly because people were using them to create child porn.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So the second version they released has filters which make it so that when you try to produce a not safe for work image, it'll just yield you a black box. There was this one person in the Stable Diffusion subreddit who had said that banning not safe for work stuff was censorship, and that the choice to make this content should be on the part of the user. To basically limit what the users could make was to go against, quote, the spirit philosophy of open source community. I feel like we've been pretty against platform censorship for the most part this season, but what do you think of this argument here? Like, do you think AI generators should be open source or like free in a way that we think certain social media platforms should be?
I mean, like, I don't think that image generators should exist in the first place is my personal opinion. I have like so many ethical issues with their existence, but I think, like, yeah, we've been supportive about a lack of censorship and like freedom on the platforms that we've discussed this season, but always with the exception of child sex materials. Like, we've consistently found is like people keep getting themselves in that dilemma, and we need to figure out a way to make that not so possible. And so, yeah, I think in this case, if these websites are going to exist, like while they're in their somewhat infancy, that they should definitely be trying to figure out a way to make it harder for people to create child porn.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, my feelings also stem from the fact that, like, I just am against these image generators. I'm against, honestly, the idea of democratizing AI. Like, it's not something I think should be used for recreation. I see very little purpose for it other than that it infringes on people's rights in almost every single way, shape, and form. So beyond me thinking that, like, text-to-image generators shouldn't exist, like you, nor be available to the public at all, I obviously think they should be heavily restricted. I completely agree. It's just, to me, it's not like the debate about the TikTok ban where it's like, oh, TikTok has problems, but it also promotes the free distribution of information that's unencumbered by government. What exactly are we protecting with Stable Diffusion? Like,
well,
nothing.
Well, no, exactly. And it's like, yeah, Pornhub needs to do a better job at making sure that there is not child porn going through the cracks. But that doesn't mean I think the website should be shut down because there are people who are making their living on this website. But I think it'll be harder for those people to earn a living on Pornhub with the existence of these image generators. So
exactly. Yeah. Like, the image generator is the beginning and the end of the problem, essentially. So Stable Diffusion and other major generators placed restrictions on not safe for work content, but then other generators like PornPen and Unstable Diffusion quickly popped up that were solely dedicated to adult imagery.
God, there is actually maybe nothing more evil than a horny nerd.
Oh my God, yeah. We should have learned this from, like, the Big Bang Theory.
Oh God, yeah.
Like, worst show on the planet. So when these already hyper-optimized images are made for the purposes of pornography, what effect do you think that they'll have on the people who consume them? Or what implications do you think this has for, like, women's beauty standards, you know?
Well, I mean, one of the big issues that feminists have taken with porn that, like, are not unfounded is that it creates unrealistic expectations in the people consuming it, which is often men, either about, like, the way women look or the way that they behave, the bodily possibilities of what a woman can do anatomically. Like, I think that porn has done a lot of damage in just creating, like, a really high expectations of sex and of, like, women among men who have yet to maybe even have that experience yet. So, like, they're just coming in with these. And it also, like, does the same to women. Like, as much as I support adult industries and adult performers, I think that there are issues with, like, what porn can do to our brains. But that being said, this is, like, a whole other level because, you know, an adult performer is still a human being. There's still, again, like, limitations to what they can do. And this is overriding that entirely. I think it's, like, the idea of, like, if you could get the exact cheeseburger you wanted anytime you wanted it or, like, could imagine it, you would just come to have, like, a really weird relationship. Sorry, this is a weird metaphor. But it's just, like, if you could just, like, have whatever you want whenever you want it.
Yeah.
And just, like, have that instant gratification of something super specific. Like, I just think that, like, it's going to make it harder for you to actually enjoy going out into the world and, like, buying a... Okay,
this you can't be only eating Royales with cheese and then all of a sudden go from that to eating, I don't know, a Wendy's burger. Like, no.
But then also it's like you're not even eating the cheeseburger. You're just like...
And also the cheeseburger doesn't fill you up because it doesn't have any... There's nothing in it.
Okay, I'm sorry. This metaphor was not thought out. I'm really going off the top of my head. I'm kind of loving
it. Let's keep it going. We're probably insulting someone here, but...
But it's just like, you know, in Spy Kids... They have this submarine where they can, like, make any food. Like, they pop thing in and they're like, I want McDonald's. And then they get McDonald's and it doesn't make any sense. It's kind of like that. It's like you shouldn't be able to just get McDonald's because you've thought of McDonald's.
Work for it.
But pull not, up your not, wrist. No, like, work for it, but it's just like you, it's like you have no, you don't value the, like, the McDonald's.
Value the McDonald's. Value the McDonald's. But don't, because boycott McDonald's. But
yeah,
value the McDonald's.
Don't value real McDonald's, but in this
spiritually,
metaphor.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, guys. Clearly, I don't know a lot about AI. I'm not a woman in STEM.
Yes, I agree with you, Anna.
Do you? Can you? Is there anything to agree with?
I'm not sure what I'm agreeing to or with.
But... I'm so sorry to everyone or anyone I've offended.
No, I agree with you that I think it creates, like, porn is already desensitizing us to you know, these unrealistic standards of what women look like and how they have sex, and that it's creating actually impossible standards. Like, the way that that girl was standing in that photo that we just talked about, no one's butt can extend from their upper body the way that hers was. Like, I can't explain how anatomically impossible that was.
Also, just, like, fantasizing about four sisters.
Well, that kind of is the fantasy.
I know, but it's just, gross, like, such grade 8 pre-peak.
Well, you think, like, the person who made that is getting laid? Probably not.
It's just, like, somebody who's never actually experienced the world's idea of, like, what would be the hottest thing ever. It's so lame.
Yeah, it's really lame.
It's so lame, and it's, like, I don't think that we should be letting them think that it isn't lame.
Yeah, totally. I also feel like porn has made people get, like, very specific about their sexual preferences. Like, the ways that we can get off. Like, my friend had this one story of this girl she knew. It kind of feels like an old wives' tale or, like, an urban legend almost. Because, like, I truly don't know if it's real. It was, like, a friend of a friend of a friend who she knew, who met up with this guy to hook up in New York. And when she went over to his place, he took out this pair of red heels from his closet. And he was like, can you put these on? And she was trying to be open-minded, and she was like, okay, I will. And she put them on because he couldn't really, like, get it up unless she did that. So she's like, hey, I'll play along, whatever floats your boat, put them on. Then he was like, can you stomp on my phone as hard as possible until it breaks? And, like, that was the way that he got off. And when my friend told us this, my other friend was like, how do you get to that point? She was like, I have no empathy for this person's, like, fetish.
It is so hyper-specific.
Like, it's so, like, surely you fell into some sort of weird porn rabbit hole that got him into... How do you develop a sexual fetish for someone destroying your phone with red heels? How? You're not born with that. You cannot be born with that.
Maybe it was a gag.
Maybe it was a silly gag. But basically the reason I'm telling that story is because porn has already made things so hyper-specific, so niche. Like, it's kind of locked us into ways of getting off that aren't very, like, you know what I mean? Like, people who watch too much porn can often only get off in one certain way. And I think, I don't know, if you can customize your porn to create your exact fantasies, this isn't even, like, asking a cam girl to dress up in a costume for you. Like, it's literally asking an AI bot to do things that could only happen in your wildest dreams. Like, obviously that's going to make this problem worse.
Well, and also,
you know?
With the cam girl, like, you're supporting her economically. When you view this, it's like, okay, the only person getting money is some other horny nerd behind this image generator.
This image generator, yes. Okay, so like I said earlier, instances of women creating and controlling the distribution of their own AI images are few and far between. Recently, men have begun to use AI to create fake models and porn stars in order to profit from them. In the Dazed article with Sika Moon, they talk about how forum sites like Reddit have seen an uptick in men asking for advice on how to launch their AI accounts on OnlyFans and Fansly. Remember, these sites usually require photo identification to sign up, but people in these forums have found ways to circumvent this. I mean, like, we talked about in our OnlyFans episode how a 12-year-old circumvented this, so I'm
with
sure
the grandmothers.
Fucking nerds could. Yeah, exactly. And they talked to this 20-year-old guy who owns several accounts dedicated to AI-generated women, like a digital pimp, basically, and each of the accounts averages about $200 a day. And Hannah, when you and I initially talked about this, you had this really great insight, and I was wondering if you wanted to share it with the listeners.
Well, yeah, I mean, sex work is sort of understood as being, like, the oldest profession, and it's one that, like, women historically have been known to, like, turn to out of necessity. Like, we know that this is something that a lot of people turn to when they're kind of backed into a corner, and it just is kind of like a comfort, and I think maybe in knowing that it's always there for people who need it, and just the idea that, like, men can now make even that obsolete by cutting real women out of the equation. It's like, okay, so we don't even get to profit off of our bodies anymore. Like, somebody else is, like, taking the idea of our bodies and finding a way to, like, capitalize off of it. That's crazy.
It's fucking horrific. Not only does this perpetuate the already, like, terrifying reality of, like, AI streamlining industry and destroying jobs, but again, like you're saying, it redirects power and capital back into the hands of men on platforms where women were finally able to have agency and make their own capital without having a middleman.
Well, yeah, I mean,
like OnlyFans. Like,
that's always been a problem with sex work, is the existence of the middleman and the way that like men have been able to cut their own profits and be controlling over women who are working in the sex industry.
We got so close so with close. OnlyFans, and then it's just immediately taken away.
And like we established in the OnlyFans episode, like there's obviously flaws to how OnlyFans was functioning. But yeah, it's like, so women don't even need to exist anymore. I mean, most men are scared of them anyways.
They could all fuck a fleshlight and that's the end of the story. Like, yeah. They don't, good for you, bye. Like, it's truly wild, yeah.
Yeah. I know, it's like men love the idea of women in the most empty, one-dimensional, like, vacuous way. But they are so deeply unnerved by women in so many different capacities. Like, they're scared of women and, like, are inventing whole technologies so that they can just not overcome those fears.
Oh, yeah.
It's sad.
It's fucking pathetic and lame and... And you caught me in my femcel era for this episode, so...
But it's like, how could you hear about this stuff and not feel, like, angry about men? And yeah, resentful about men. And obviously not every man is a tech loser creating AI, but I just think that, like, more of them are going to have these mindsets once they have this kind of technology available to them. Like, it's not really a secret that a lot of men don't like women.
Yeah, exactly. And the 20-year-old guy also made this insane claim in the article where he was like, there's demand in the market and we're not the only supply. We're not even the superior supply. Real girls still have an advantage with videos and complex poses. And it's just like, as if that's all sex workers do. Like, their entire appeal is, oh, that they take videos and that they can do certain poses and not, like, the myriad other forms of labor that they have to perform.
There's also so much emotional labor involved with sex work.
And
as
more,
well.
There's like a million types of labor that are involved in it. It's just like the most diminishing comment and just goes to show why this specific man is doing this, because that's what he thinks sex work is. This all kind of actually reminds me of this conversation that was happening when Lil Michaela first came up.
Yeah.
Want to tell the listeners a little bit about Lil Michaela?
Yeah, Lil Michaela is a influencer, quote unquote.
Generated. She's like a computer. She's like an illustration or something.
Yeah, generated influencer. I think she must be from like 2015 or something because she looks really 2015. She's got baby bangs and freckles and the
space buns. They have made her like biracial.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like an art experiment or something. But she does like brand partnerships and like... is edited into photos with like celebrities. It's like, wow, I attended this event.
Oh, it's so insidious.
It's so crazy. I wrote a really bad paper about her in university that...
oh my God, you should release it to the public.
I absolutely will not do that. It's actually cursed. And then one of my biggest like sources was Naomi Wolf. So
I mean, we simply can't ignore the beauty myth.
But
it's a part of our history.
She's like an influencer, like fake... influencer.
She's very clearly digitally rendered. She was created by this LA startup, and at first they tried to pass off that she was real,
which is so funny.
And then they started this whole storyline where she's like a robot and she doesn't know where she came from.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and like you're saying, she's worked with all these like really high profile brands. Like, she's worked with Prada, and she's also been quote unquote outspoken about social justice issues, which is just fucking gross because she's literally a marketing gimmick and she's making a company, I'm sure, that's full of white people lots and lots of money. But it just makes me think of this idea of like men, adult men, or like companies owning these female influencers. Like, with every advancement in technology and capitalism, women just seem to never have agency.
Well, and it's also like what we were just saying, like this OnlyFans guy devaluing all of the labor that goes into sex work. I think as much as we're like, influencers don't have real jobs, like influencers who are actually working with brands like Prada and are like doing that kind of stuff, there is a lot of work that goes into what they're doing. I'm not like poor influencers, but I'm just like,
it is a labor.
It is a labor, and it is a labor that is predominantly done by young women in a way that like there are a lot of reasons to look down on influencing, but I think that there is also an initial response of like, well, this is like a silly, frivolous like woman's thing as well. And I think that again, cutting a woman out of the equation for something that they're doing or a way that women have learned to make money on the internet. I don't know. It's very patronizing.
Oh, of course. Well, it's patronizing and it's like, it just feels a little hateful. I don't know. Something hateful about it.
Well, yeah. And also then like trying to capitalize off of the like things that are important to Gen Z and millennial people in a way to like sell them shit is always gross. I see
right through those fucking baby bangs and space buns, bro. Right through them.
Yeah. She lived in Montreal for many years.
Stop. Oh, God.
Oh, you're kidding.
You.
I'm saying you lived in Montreal.
I thought you meant Lil Michaela.
No, that girl probably lived in Berlin.
Oh, yeah. She got into Berghain.
I bet she did. This episode is brought to you by Mubi, a curated streaming service dedicated to elevating great cinema from around the globe. From iconic directors to emerging auteurs, there is always something new to discover. With Mubi, each and every film is hand-selected so you can explore the best of cinema, streaming anytime, anywhere. One of our favorite films of the past year is the Mubi release How to Have Sex, the debut feature from Molly Manning Walker, which we were both lucky enough to catch at TIFF last year. Now available on Mubi in North America, How to Have Sex follows three teenage girls on holiday from England to Melia, Greece, where they experience the highs and lows of total freedom. How to Have Sex manages to be both a euphoric fever dream and a brutally honest exploration of sexuality and consent. Its themes will sit with you, but it will never feel like you're being lectured. Personally, I would like to induct this film into the official coming-of-age canon. You can try Mubi for free for 30 days at mubi.com/rehash. That's mubi.com/rehash for a whole month of great cinema for free.
So the Days article also interviews a sex worker named Liara Rue. She basically goes, quote, AI might be compared to a McDonald's chicken nugget, carefully engineered to trigger an intense response into the brain, whereas the experience of hiring a high-end sex worker might be more like going to a farm-to-table fine dining restaurant. The fine dining spot is simply better at affecting reality. Which, okay, well, for one is a funny update on your insane
back to the
metaphor.
McDonald's
back to the McDonald's. Who knew we'd be talking about McDonald's so much?
But, AI is, like, fast food, though.
Yeah, but the end of the quote, what she's saying, you know, the fine dining spot, so the sex work, is simply better at affecting reality, to me just raises interesting questions about the performance of sex work.
Mm.
Like, we talk about how AI is inauthentic. But do you think maybe the reason it almost pairs so well with porn, in some ways, is because sex work is inherently inauthentic?
Well, obviously, I mean, porn is about fantasy. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with having fantasies and necessarily, like, wanting to see them played out as long as you're, like, aware, I think, of the fact that what you're consuming is fantasy. It's the same with cinema. It's like, I think having a certain awareness of the artificiality of it perhaps like allows you to maybe have like a mental separation from it. It's not like you think it's real life, but I just think that something about the uncanniness of like AI or something, or the fact that they're trying to figure out how to pass it off as like realistic as possible, it feels like it's maybe trying to cut that out of the equation. Like, I think that vintage pornography is interesting because it's like so fake. It's like so theatrical or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
But the bodies feel so real.
Yeah, it's no but way. I think there's nothing wrong with it being theatrical. Like, mm-hmm. we all consume fiction.
Yeah, it's performance. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with like the performativity of it. I think that when you know that there's a human being that when the cameras stop rolling, they go back to their normal life. It's just very different from something that exists solely for the purpose of you consuming it and then ceases to exist.
Because that's really interesting.
It's
yeah.
just pixels.
That's such an interesting point. I think there's something sexy about, you know, maybe hooking up with someone who you've known for a long time and it's like, oh, seeing them in this position where it's like porn stars, you don't know them, they're strangers, they're performing something. But again, there is at least the allure that they're a person, that they have like an inner world. You know what I mean? I think that's a really interesting point that you just made. Part of me, when I thought about this question, was actually thinking maybe it would be the opposite, that sex work isn't inherently inauthentic. Like, I do think in some ways it is, and like it is performative. But the author of the Days article says at one point, a machine can never reproduce actual sensuality, nor can it offer the human connection that a lot of people seek these creators out for. Which just makes me think back to that, just similar to what you're saying about the person like leaving after they're done their job. it kind of makes me think back to the conversation also about intimacy that we had with regards to OnlyFans. I just wonder whether, like, the historical intimacy aspect of sex work is almost what could save it from AI rendering sex workers obsolete. Like, the whole reason that people were talking in the OnlyFans episode about OnlyFans being more appealing to clients and viewers than Pornhub was because it's a real person they could talk to. You know, sex work is all about performance and, like, exaggerating sexuality, but I think what differentiates it from AI is that an AI can never truly be intimate with another person. Mm-hmm. But then again, it's not like online sex workers are actually meeting these people in person the way street sex workers are, maybe, for example. I don't know. So then part of me also wonders if that might be the major downfall of online sex work as well, is because it doesn't have the actual real life intimacy. I don't know.
Well, I think, you know, we established in the OnlyFans episode that there are relationships that go on between a lot of, you know, OnlyFans creators and the people who support them. I think in regards to online sex work and AI, that as image generating gets more sophisticated and realistic, so does chat and the ability to have the computer speak to the people on there. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if people were going to take advantage of that as well to kind of allow. I'm just scared, I guess, about, like, once AI gets more sophisticated, gets a little less silly, there are fewer, like, eight-fingered people in pictures, that, like, you know, they'll be able to utilize the capabilities of the text aspect to even, like, contribute to that side of the relationship, to really feel like there's another person on the other end, which, you know, I think if you're someone who is maybe, like, scared of, like, intimacy with human beings in real life, you might not be that dissuaded by the fact that the person you're communicating with is not a person at all.
Yeah, it's like her.
Well, yeah.
Kind of predicted this almost. AI is going to be so sophisticated that it's just Scarlett Johansson.
And that is probably the first thing they will do.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we will see. She makes an appearance this episode.
I'm not shocked at all.
Yeah. Circling back to the notion that, like, no AI-generated image can be made without a real person, this 20-year-old was able to create these women by buying photos and videos of real adult creators and rendering them onto the AI models, like the way Sika kind of does it with herself and her friends. And he said that usually the women he buys these images from don't know exactly what they're going to be used for. Sex workers have been reporting that suspicion around whether AI girls are real ends up being placed on them. Like, there are forums on 4chan that'll post, like, a real-life sex worker and argue about whether they're AI or not.
Oh, God, and I'm sure that that's also something they have to deal with a lot.
But something I kind of want to ask is, do you think Facetune has any culpability here? How are we in a reality where a photo of a woman is actually, like, making people confused about whether or not she's real? Like, I am a little bit like,
And going back to my university paper, it was actually about Facetune and the kind of transhuman beauty expectations of women, where it's not, like, how technology is changing the way we expect women to look and everything. And that's why I read on Lil Michaela. It was still a really bad paper. But, I mean, yes, I think Facetune, of course, is just an extension of, like, what Photoshop was doing. But I think that our now, like, expectation that, like, images we see are going to be fine-tuned and edited, the kind of Instagram face, as we call it, that we sort of expect to see in images of people, like, high-quality photographs, of course, would, like, make it harder to differentiate those things. I also think that, like, just the normalization of plastic surgery and the features that end up becoming very popular on people that we see on Instagram, like, there's, like, a number of reasons. I think we're just way more used to people looking more artificial who are in industries where their face is sort of at the front of things.
What's kind of interesting is that a lot of these AI girls and their faces look like a face-tuned face. Like, they have Instagram face. And so it is kind of this feedback loop where I think a lot of different parts of this have culpability. I'm not blaming necessarily the women who face-tune. I do think there is some responsibility in, like, completely altering your appearance and, like, selling that to people. on Instagram, for example. Like, I think, you know, if people are going to see Gamoon's profile and genuinely not knowing that that's a fake individual, like, that face is not real because they completely lost sight of what a real face looks like on Instagram. Like, there is something a little bit interesting about that. It just feels almost like it's the natural conclusion or, like, the logical next step of this Facetune era. But now things get a bit more complicated. So in order to render the adult creators' faces onto the AI model, the 20-year-old used a technology that has been causing quite a stir in recent years. Do you want to guess what that is?
ChatGPT?
No, that's a text-based platform.
Oh, wait, right. I don't know.
He used deepfake.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
So deepfake is an umbrella term for hyper-realistic videos where a person's face is analyzed by a deep learning algorithm and then superimposed onto the body of another person in a video. Obviously, this kind of, like, Frankensteining has been happening for years. Like, in 2006, this Irish magazine posted nude photos with Tiger Woods' wife's face on them, like, photoshopped onto them. There's this entire subreddit called r/doppelbanger.
Oh my god.
Where people photoshop faces onto the bodies of porn performers. But the advancement of deepfakes is that the algorithm learns the features of someone's face and its expression and then replicates them in tandem with the body in the video that it's stitching the face onto. So it's like a 3D rendering of this person's face.
Guys, we could solve cancer. We could cure fucking cancer.
It would be awesome if you guys could cure cancer and, like, solve climate change, but instead you're doing this bullshit. So deepfakes are very realistic. They blew up around 2018 when they became, again, widely accessible with apps like FaceApp. Do you have any, like, early experiences with deepfake, like, when you first encountered it?
The first time I ever heard about it, I think, was in a university lecture. Somebody had shown us, I think on BuzzFeed, there was a video that looked like it was Barack Obama speaking, but it was actually Jordan Peele, I think, doing an Obama impression, and then they had, like, edited. It was a deep fake of Obama, basically, but it was just to, like, highlight the, like, dangers. This was, I think, around the 2016 election and just, like, such anxieties around misinformation being spread. And so it was sort of like a PSA for that. And we watched that in one of my classes. But I think that's the first time I ever encountered deep fake.
Interesting. Okay, I encountered them quite a bit later with the 2020 election. Basically, deepfakes of Donald Trump were being used for disinformation campaigns. So that was the first time I heard of them. I don't think I had heard about them before.
Well, I think it was post-election. It was, like, while Trump maybe was in office, but it was,
yeah. Oh, yeah, I believe you.
Yeah.
Recently, there have also been these, like, weird ads popping up on Instagram of Selena Gomez talking in, like, a really dead monotone voice selling Le Creuset pots, which ended up being a deepfake scam. So spooky.
That is so spooky.
And if we thought that revenge porn had at least been stigmatized and criminalized, deepfakes are like revenge porn on steroids. Because according to a study by this Dutch company called Sensity, 96% of deepfakes are sexually explicit and feature women who did not consent to being in them.
Wow, I'm shocked.
Right off the bat, I'm curious. Does this feel like the natural next step of AI to you? Deepfake porn.
This is a really interesting way to bookend the season because we started with the Pam and Tommy tape and we started with the way that the internet was kind of utilized in this way so that people could basically, like, satisfy their curiosity around the, like, private lives of celebrity. And it feels like the internet, I think, has, like, allowed our imaginations to run so wild that, like, we're not even curious about the real lives of these people. We just want to see a projected idea of it and, like, image of it. And so I think that if we are just, like, so deeply and perversely fascinated with celebrity culture in this way, it seems inevitable that we would be using the technology that has advanced from the original technology that allowed us to see the Pam and Tommy tape to then satisfy our imaginations in this way.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. It's just almost like technology is used for self-gratification or self-satisfaction. And that's kind of like what it's actually being used for, as opposed to, you know, solving genuine social issues.
Well, it's like the privacy of the internet has basically allowed us to feel less shame, or maybe not less shame, but we don't have to be as public with our shame about these being the things we are actually deeply concerned with and curious about. So it's like,
I just want to watch Minnie Mouse getting railed. Like, sorry.
But it's like, yeah, it's like if no one's there to see you and what you really want is to see Scarlett Johansson having sex, even though it's not actually Scarlett Johansson, then like you have all the freedom to do that. And no one's going to be there to judge you for it.
The internet said, play on, brother.
But it's sad because I think the fascinating thing, as much as it was morally dubious the way that people were consuming the Pam and Tommy tape, at least there, it's like, it just comes from a base like curiosity. There's nothing curious about like wanting to just have your favorite celebrity's face like projected onto this video, because it's not actually telling you anything.
Oh, you're not, and we'll learning talk about anything. That.
There was people at least kind of felt like they were getting a glance into something when they watched the Pam and Tommy tape. It was barely about the sex.
Yeah, and we'll get into the kind of contradictions of that.
Yeah.
I just think like technological advancement has always provoked an interesting conversation about autonomy. Like whether a machine is sentient, for example, and whether that machine should have rights. Like that was a big conversation in the 20th century. The fact that machines are, you know, replacing the minds and bodies of workers, whatever. Yeah, what we see time and time again is that whenever there's some sort of innovation in tech, the first people targeted by it are women. And AI kind of feels like the final boss of this phenomenon. Like women are the ones losing their autonomy every time. You know, we thought we'd see flying cars by this point, and instead it's like people want to see the face of Minnie Mouse generated onto the body of a porn star. Like, yeah, what?
Weren't we supposed to have like hovercrafts or something? Yeah. Isn't that what Back to the Future predicted?
Like, I watched the Jetsons and I was excited, and here we are instead.
Yeah, I think it's because like behind so much of like technological advancement is just hubristic men.
Men who didn't get laid early enough and now hate everyone around them.
Back to like our opening conversation, it's just like men who lack the emotional intelligence or the depth to like look beyond their like immediate goals to think about how things impact context outside of themselves.
God, what a beautiful way to bring that around, Hannah. What a beautiful way. I'm glad you incorporated my rant into the intellectual texture of this episode.
Well, I mean,
and while anyone's face can be used in a deepfake, the people targeted by it most frequently are celebrities. One of the earliest deepfakes was a video of Gal Gadot waving a fleshlight around. According to analytics from this one deepfake website, Mr. Deepfakes, Scarlett Johansson and Emma Watson are the two women featured most often on the site.
Oh, I'm shocked.
Well, yeah, I feel like this kind of thing has been happening with Emma Watson forever. Like, I remember there was this fake nude of her going around when we were in high school. Why do you think, like, Emma Watson is the target of this so often?
Oh, well, Emma Watson is somebody that if you grew up in the era that we grew up in, and you watched Harry Potter films and like came of age with the actors on that, she's like so many people's first crush. If you talk to any kind of like later millennial or younger Gen Z guy, their first girl that they ever liked was Emma Watson.
Was it We're Awakened for?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, there's also something about Emma Watson where she seems kind of like private, and I think that there is something about her public image. She's like the smart, like good girl, you know.
Well, exactly. Like it's going back to like coveted bodies thing that we talked about with Bella Thorne and Bad Baby, where it's like, oh, she has this body that is forbidden, but then it goes another step further because Emma Watson is this good girl. She is very private. She would never be naked in a movie, essentially. So now people are kind of like, instead, kind of trespassing upon her privacy by doing this. It's weird though, because like celebrity deepfakes are also the opposite of a revenge porn in a way. Because like the whole point of revenge porn is to like expose someone's real body, whereas like you were saying just now, the deepfake isn't even the celebrity's body. The whole allure of it is just so strange to me. Like, yeah, it is uncurious.
But I think at the end of the day, like you were saying, it's about stripping people of their autonomy. When you share someone's nude that they did not consent to being shared, that is stripping them of their autonomy. When you portray somebody in a situation that they, one, like, didn't do, and two, did not consent to being portrayed that way, like, that is taking their autonomy away in an even more extreme example, because you're making their quote-unquote body do things.
Yeah, exactly. Like, your puppet mastering them. It's your ability to control them, essentially. Yeah, it's very spooky. Deepfakes had a brief stint on Pornhub, but they were really quickly banned. In the Samantha Cole book that we've been using a lot this season, a spokesperson from Pornhub emailed her with a statement that said, "Non-consensual content directly violates our terms of service and consists of content such as revenge porn, deepfakes, or anything published without a person's consent or permission." And if you look up, I tried this, like if you look up deepfake in their search engine, you'll get a message that says, "Your search could be for illegal and abusive sexual material, including non-consensual intimate imagery or image-based sexual abuse." Which I was like, damn, Pornhub sometimes surprises me. Mm-hmm. Although I'm sure there are ways that people have found to get around this. Like I think that there are still deepfakes on there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But here's the irony. So earlier this season, we talked about how credit card companies have been withdrawing their services from adult platforms like Pornhub or OnlyFans, which has really negatively impacted sex workers. But as of last year, Visa and MasterCard were still able to be used on the deepfake website Fantopia. A lot of deepfake creators also accept cryptocurrency. Putting this into conversation with Fosta Sesta, do you see any irony here?
Oh, yeah. Because we're okay with, like, images of, like, women being sold at the hands of men. We're just not okay with, like, real women using their bodies for a profit in their own terms. Like, we're okay with the idea of it. We just, like, we just draw a line at an actual woman having actual sex for money because that is so hard to fathom. We'd way rather, like, a computer generate an image.
Of course, yeah. They're gonna turn a blind eye whenever it's something that actually is harming adult women directly instead of a platform that actually does somewhat benefit adult women. And when we think about deepfakes, we think about the celebrity whose face is being used. Like, that is always the subject of the conversation. But we rarely think about the body. And always the body in a deepfake is of a porn performer.
Who's not getting
paid.
Yeah, who's having their intellectual property stolen.
So yet again, like, yeah, sex work is being belittled and co-opted. And Samantha Cole puts it really brilliantly in the book. She says, "For most deepfake creators, these performers are only the sum of interchangeable body parts," which is pretty similar to the way that OnlyFans guy was talking about them.
Oh, well, yeah.
It's just really fascinating because so much of the conversation surrounding deepfakes has been about the threats they pose to national security. Like, the first time we both heard of them was in regards to disinformation campaigns. And until, like, last month, the conversation was barely concerned about the non-consensual porn of it all, even though 96% of it is non-consensual porn.
Yeah.
Cole puts it best. She's like, "There's no high-tech solution that'll solve the deepfake problem. The core problem, objectification of women and total disregard for the safety of property of sex workers, is much harder to solve. We can't code our way out of social issues." I love that book.
Yeah. No, and that's exactly it. It's like, wow, we taught men how to make things happen with, like, zeros and ones on a computer or whatever the fuck, but we've not taught them to have basic human empathy.
Oh, yes. And that is the theme of this episode. It's the theme of this week. It's the theme of hopefully not next week.
I think everybody who's in, like, some kind of computer engineering program in university should be forced to take, like, existentialist philosophy.
I think everyone in STEM should take humanities, and that's that on that. Like, I think humanities really undermined and disregarded by a lot of people in STEM, and I think a lot of you guys lack empathy.
Yeah.
So
what if I don't know how
to do literally anything, me, but
but I got some good thoughts in my head.
I have feelings, and those are important.
A nice person.
And if I was in charge of the world, I don't think I'd destroy it. I'll say that.
Yeah, you know what? I would know when to stop.
Yeah. So I'm sure a lot of you have been wondering when I'm going to mention Taylor Swift. And that is now.
Well, yes.
A big reason mainstream culture has started talking about deepfake pornography recently is because this January, fake pornographic images of Taylor Swift were circulating around Twitter. One of the most popular ones was viewed over 45 million times and reposted 24,000 times. Apparently, the images were created on Telegram using Microsoft Designer and obviously made without Taylor Swift's permission. And this caused a big discussion about the responsibility of social media platforms in getting rid of this stuff before it gets widely circulated. And also as to whether Taylor Swift is going to fight the deepfake problem. Do you want to kind of talk a bit about why people would think that Taylor Swift is the perfect person to go up against deepfake porn?
Yeah, I mean, well, one.
You're like, well, yes.
Okay, you want me to talk about Taylor Swift?
Permission
fine
to talk about Taylor Swift? You have your full pass.
God, kill me. Well, one thing I was going to bring up earlier, and then I figured we would be talking about her eventually, is that For the music video for Famous, Kanye West, do you remember that
video? Oh, yeah, totally.
It depicted a bunch of very famous figures like Kanye, Kim Kardashian, Taylor Swift, Donald Trump, and a few other people. Like, basically, like a sculpture, a life, very like uncanny lifelike sculpture of them, like completely naked in bed together. And I remember feeling like that, as much as it was like for art, felt incredibly
violating.
Yeah, it just felt like it was being done tactfully to like humiliate her specifically because of what was going on with them. But
one of the many reasons on the list that people have forgotten about Kim Kardashian, maybe you guys can remember it again and you'll dislike her.
Yeah.
We always forget. We just forget the laundry list.
But yeah, I remember being like, people didn't really talk about that as like that. It didn't feel like it was as big of a deal as you would assume it to be, especially someone like with her like public image. She's not someone we would ever assume to see naked, like rendered naked in any way. And I think she's like this all-American girl, and she's
like a majority girl fan base.
Yeah, there's like a certain like innocence to her. She only just started swearing in her music. Like when she sings about sex, it's very much through like
she's
metaphors.
She's a dork.
Yeah. So like I think that was just something that had it surprised me that it didn't become enough of like a conversation. But then like obviously in the time since then, she's become like the most powerful woman on the planet in ways that I think is very scary and weird. Mm-hmm. But it means that she has political sway that like no celebrity should have, but that does have the ability to get things done. And so in this case, like Taylor Swift being the victim of deepfake porn and taking issue with it and actually trying to get some kind of justice for that does seem like it could have the potential to push the government to like take the time to draft legislation around the issue, because Taylor Swift is going to just bring attention to the issue. It's going to make people start demanding that this be solved. It's people who didn't realize that this was happening at that scale are going to have their eyes drawn to it. So
yeah, exactly. I think I think Taylor Swift, that's exactly it. I think since the Famous video and just in general, I think she's really problematized the concept of ownership throughout a lot of her career. Like, she's very quick to like sue and counter sue people over intellectual property stuff. She had that whole controversy with her masters and Scooter Braun. Like, she's kind of known for this conversation.
Yeah.
The thing is, Taylor Swift is kind of different from people like Emma Watson and Scarlett Johansson. Like we were just saying, even seeing her portrayed naked in a Famous video was shocking because that's not really what her brand is. She's mostly like beloved by girls. She's not exactly a figure men like. She's not really considered a sex symbol among men. No. And it got me thinking because I was like, I think there's a very different undercurrent behind sharing deepfakes of Taylor Swift than there is with these other female celebrities.
Well, yeah.
And it actually made me think a lot about Marie Antoinette. Want to guess why?
Because Marie Antoinette, despite not being the person like in charge of what was going on, perhaps people seem to take the most gratification out of her murder, out of her humiliation, maybe. Is that it?
No, but I was really excited to see what you would say.
I don't know.
Well, during the French Revolution, people were circulating pornographic pamphlets of Marie Antoinette nude and basically fucking her family members, like in incestuous sexual positions, degrading ones. And I just think this kind of phenomenon is a lot more wrapped up in the humiliation aspect of a specific woman than in the gratification of the man. Or, you know, the gratification of the man comes explicitly from the woman's humiliation more than anything else. It's more like how right-wing people make nude images of Hillary Clinton, right? There's this woman, Laura Bates, who wrote this book about incels called Men Who Hate Women, and all the time, she basically gets sent these like doctored images and videos of herself doing these degrading sex acts. And when she was interviewed about the Taylor Swift thing, Bates said that, quote, "It's a way of putting her back in her box. It's a way of saying to any woman, it doesn't matter who you are, how powerful you are, we can reduce you to a sex object and there's nothing you can do about it."
Well, yeah. And it's also like, if you thought about a male equivalent to Taylor Swift, like someone who was that powerful culturally, I don't even know who I would say is like on par with her. Like, obviously there are powerful men, but like men in sort of like an entertainment sphere, I don't know if she has like an exact peer. I really don't think that there would be this like inclination to like degrade her or humiliate her in this way, or like to degrade him, like the male equivalent, mm-hmm. in that way. It's like, yeah, Hillary Clinton being subjected to that is just surely as a way of being like, listen, woman, we still own your body. Like, yeah. we're still in charge of what
you're
you
still
do.
A woman at the end
yeah.
of the day.
Yeah. And it's like, it doesn't matter who the woman is, or like, I don't love Hillary Clinton, but I also don't think that her naked body should be like deepfaked.
No, I don't think that should happen to her. It's in a similar way that people were making a, you know, pornographic imagery of Anita Sarkeesian during this whole Gamergate fiasco, right? Like, it's a humiliation tactic. So deepfake porn has been around for a little bit, but like I said, the Taylor Swift debacle was special because it showed how quickly these things were able to circulate on social media. And a lot of the season, we've kind of seen over and over again social media platforms bearing most of the responsibility when it comes to ending this kind of abuse. But I'm kind of curious, like, when it comes to AI, who do you think should be held more responsible? Like, the AI generators or social media? Because it feels like all the blame now is on social media.
Well, it's like there's always going to be ways for people to share images that isn't necessarily on like the mainstream social media platforms. Obviously, those platforms should take the initiative to make it harder for people to do it there. But I think that ultimately, like, we need to put a lot more restrictions on the people who yield that power. The thing I fear is that with AI, that the more democratized it gets, the more people are going to be able to have control over, like, the technologies.
Yeah, exactly.
That it's, like, I don't know if we can just, like, put the cat back in the box. Is that what the expression is?
Well, yeah, and that's, like, I just feel like these AI generators are the ones that opened Pandora's box.
Yeah, it's not...
The cat back in the box?
Well, no, who let the cat out of the box is a completely different expression.
Who let the dogs out, am I right? Put those dogs away. Yeah, I just think, I don't know, social media isn't specifically about this kind of thing. So it's not very easy to place restrictions on it when that's not its primary function. Whereas the primary function of these AI generators is to make fabricated images stolen from the internet. It's like, once again, they are the beginning and the end of the problem.
And I just don't think that the people, we can shame the people who are making these types of images out of not doing it, because they don't have shame.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I think we can bully like people in Hollywood out of like using AI generated content by like drawing attention to it and making them embarrassed because they're at least supposed to care about artistic integrity. These nerds don't give a shit about anything.
They don't give a singular
fuck. Have to be legislated into not doing this shit or
God,
restricted.
The like, we just gave nerds way too much power. The past 20 years probably just really indulged in nerd culture in a way that I'm like, we need to go back to bullying them, like we said in the ChatGPT episode.
You should agree.
I just want to end with this kind of like philosophical discussion. I just kind of want to talk about pornography because I think AI porn and deepfakes have really just made me question what constitutes as pornography. Like, can a video or a photo of someone that's been made without their consent, does that count as porn? Is porn just, like, anything that's made for sexual gratification? Like, what is porn?
I guess it's, like, porn is just, yeah, the blanket term that we use. But I think it's actually surprising that we haven't kind of come up with some other terminology to make sure that we like are making a distinction between the two. Like, I'm actually surprised we haven't come up with like another word for like non-consensual like pornographic material.
Yeah,
which would probably then encompass AI and like deepfakes.
Because my understanding is porn is something that isn't made for artistic purposes, is only made for sexual gratification and titillation. Like, that's how the distinction is made. That's why like that all these obscenity laws are created with regards to like movies and nudity and porn and the distinction between the two. But I think that there needs to be yet another distinction within the category of porn, because surely I just don't know if it counts as porn, and not even in a moral sense. Like, I genuinely don't know.
I think it's the same way that we don't consider rape sex,
right? Yeah, exactly.
Like, I think that they are different things, and I think that it's like a semantic thing that we should actually take up.
We should get to the bottom of that.
Yes, maybe we will be the ones to coin the term.
I hope we coined many terms this season. Yeah, I also just think, like, what we're seeing, and you said this in the episode, you were like, a lot of porn is fantasy.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of what we're seeing with AI is this fantasy element. And I don't know, it just made me think maybe porn is something that's made for, like, sexual wish fulfillment. Like, maybe that's what porn really is. But then sometimes I'm like, oh, is it actually just trying to recreate real life? Like, what? I don't know.
Well, I think porn, if we're thinking about it like as a medium, like thinking about it in regards to like cinema or literature, it's like, well, you have things that are written or created to simulate like real life, right? Like things that are supposed to give realism. And then you have things that are high fantasy. Like I think that there's genre within porn. There's like a spectrum mm-hmm. of style of genre. But at the end of the day, a person with like a logical brain understands that what is being done is being done for the camera, is being done for that experience. Like when you watch a movie, you don't think that Scarlett Johansson continues to be Black Widow when the camera's cut, you know?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, some people, their brains don't have that common sense.
But then there's like amateur porn and people are just actually having sex. Like, yeah, with other partners there, like, what is that? That's also porn.
Yeah, but that's still, like, there's still always, like, as long as someone knows they're being filmed, mm-hmm. there is performance there. If I started filming you, mm-hmm. just, like, going about your everyday life, there's still performance in your knowledge of the camera, right? Mm. If you're not oblivious to the camera, and porn made with somebody oblivious to the camera is non-consensual.
Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of like why Jennifer Ringley wouldn't consider, you know, her 24-hour live cam to be considered porn, because she's not aware of the camera, you know?
Yeah, well, there's just like, there's an acknowledgement of artifice.
Yeah.
Like, as like much as
porn is performance.
Yeah, people
in the way that Pamela's sex tape isn't porn, really. It's a sex tape.
Yeah, and so the fascination with Pamela's was, how do we define this as genre? Because part of it is like home video, part of it is porn, but also home video, again, being on camera, there's artifice there.
There's also just a reason we don't call sex tapes porn, like, because they're not really porn.
Yeah.
You know, it's very fascinating. We're coming to the end of the season. This is the finale episode. And this has been a great season. I think this is my favorite season to date.
I'm really happy with the work we've done this season. And I've also just feel like it's opened my mind up in a lot of ways. I was not comfortable talking about this type of stuff on the podcast up until this season.
And At the beginning, we kind of had a conversation where I was like, wait, Hannah, this season was partially your idea. Really don't want to talk about this kind of stuff.
But I've kind of, you know,
she spread her wings.
I just think that it's like gotten me out of my box a little bit, or out of my shell. God, I'm really bad with metaphors and like turns of phrase. It's gotten me out of my shell a bit. And I think that it's also just like made me think about things like in a philosophical sense. I think it's made me think a lot about my relationship to the internet. I found this to be the most educational experience of doing the podcast, like, for me.
Yeah, me as well. I think it was nice to just kind of follow a story arc, you know?
Yeah,
like an ongoing arc. Thank you, Samantha Cole, for your beautiful book, because that really helped us.
Yeah, I feel like we've read so many interesting things, too, for this.
If you guys are looking for something to read, that's a great book. There's so much more on there that we weren't able to cover, but you guys should check it out. We also have some bonus episodes coming up on the Patreon, which will be related to the season, and you guys should definitely subscribe, because we are going to be taking a little hiatus to research our next season. So if you want to hear from us, you should definitely subscribe to the Patreon. We also have weekly minisodes, as we said at the beginning of the episode, and I know we say it every episode, but I just want to let you know, it's pretty good. You get a lot. You get a bang for your buck on our Patreon.
Oh yeah, for sure. Pun intended. Just kidding.
This season was a money shot. Nope.
Nope.
Last season was a Wendy's burger. This one was a Royale with cheese. Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.